The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So for the last few weeks, I've been talking about working with primarily difficult emotions, working with the what we might call afflictive emotions, those that tend to make us feel not so good at times, those emotions that we struggle with. And just as a little recap, mostly these emotions that we struggle with they're based in one of three kind of root mental movements, either moving away from something we don't like or towards something we do like, or kind of a space of confusion around things where we're not really connecting with things. And so these are the basic movements of mind around greed, aversion, and delusion. And, the aversion tends to produce some of the most familiar of the afflictive states, like frustration, irritation, hatred, anger, rage, distress. Those kinds of things are often out of aversion, not liking something, wanting to get rid of something, wanting to control or fix something that we don't like. And then there's the states that arise out of wanting to have something. And these are often not quite as often felt as afflictive so much, perhaps. Sometimes they are. It's sometimes clear that when we want something that we can't have, that there's suffering around that wanting. You know, if there's something that we like that we want and we can't have it, then there's a feeling of the frustration around that wanting, and so we get a sense of the dissatisfactoriness of the wanting. Excitement is kind of born out of this as well. The state of kind of it, the excitement, again, we wouldn't necessarily interpret that or notice that as a afflictive emotion, most of us. But it is generally pulling us out of the present moment. It's pulling us usually into the future. We're excited about something, we're propelled into the future thinking about something that's going to happen, and there's a kind of an agitation of body and mind. The mind isn't particularly settled when it's excited, and it's not particularly meeting experience here and now. So we're basically missing our lives here and now in the service of excitement about something that may or may not happen in the future. And so it's got a kind of a little spin to it. And if you actually pay attention to excitement in your experience, you might notice that the bodily sensations of excitement are very similar to the bodily sensations of anxiety. The quivering in the stomach, the kind of perhaps a little bit of perspiration that comes, the kind of scatteredness of mind that comes around excitement also comes around anxiety. So there's some kind of similarities there. And none of us would confuse anxiety, or we can actually, we can confuse anxiety and not really see it as a suffering state. But it's usually because we're focused on something else. So let me just explain that for a moment, because I think there are ways that these states of mind can mask the fact of the dissatisfaction, the unsatisfactoriness, the suffering or distress or stress inherent in these states. So for instance, in the state of wanting itself, and what I've been talking about in these past few weeks is that basically when an emotion arises, the instructions are to turn towards the feeling, to take our attention out of the thing in the world that we either want to have or want to get rid of, and turn our attention towards the state of being. What is it like to be a human being feeling this experience? So with wanting, the feeling of wanting something, the feeling of wanting itself is actually unpleasant. When we turn towards the feeling of wanting, it feels like we're being pulled towards something. And there's an inherent sense of dissatisfaction in the wanting itself, because the wanting is present because we don't have something that we want. So there's an inherent kind of dissatisfaction in that. But what our minds do when we want something is that we kind of project into the future, imagining perhaps something, might go something like this. We might imagine what our lives are going to be like when we have that thing. And that creates a pleasant fantasy in the mind. And that pleasant fantasy kind of obscures the unpleasantness of the state of wanting itself. So the states of some of these afflictive states can actually obscure the kind of dissatisfaction or unsatisfactoriness of the state itself, because we're so focused outwards. Similarly, with the ones that are motivated out of aversion, the emotions that are motivated out of not wanting something, wanting to get rid of something that we don't like, we are focused again on, it may go something like this. I think there's probably many ways that it can happen, but just as one example, if there's something that we don't like, what we may be doing is trying to figure out how to manipulate our environment to get rid of the thing. And in that process of manipulation, there can be a feeling of control, a sense of, I can fix this, I know how to fix this, I know how to change this. And that feeling of control is generally a pleasant feeling. So again, that pleasantness of that feeling of control obscures the suffering or stress around the aversion. So these afflictive emotions can actually kind of mask themselves in a way. So last week, I think mostly what I talked about was that turning towards what our experience is, seeing if we can let go of the thing in the world that we either want to have or want to get rid of, or perhaps an idea in our minds. Now, this is another way that these emotions can come about. We create an idea in our minds. I want to be this way. Or I don't want to be this way. I've always been this way and I don't want to be this way. What we're actually reacting to is an idea. And then we create all kinds of plans and agendas around how to become or let go of, become the thing we want to be, or to let go of the being the thing that we want to be. And there can be a lot of suffering around this. So I talked about turning away from the thing that we are kind of focused on with respect to these difficult emotions and turning towards the emotion itself. And particularly turning towards the experience of the emotion in the body as being one main place to connect with the present moment experience of this emotion. So it's counterintuitive sometimes to do this. You know, this is not, why wouldn't I just want to control or fix? Why wouldn't I want to have the things that I want? And, you know, that this is a kind of a a place that we each need to explore for ourselves, because you will find in your experience that there are times when you want something and it's easy to have, it's easy to get, and there doesn't seem to be any issue around having it or getting it. And so that doesn't seem to be particularly any suffering around that. Or there may be times when it's easy to get rid of something that you don't want. And again, not particularly feeling like there's much suffering around that. But there are going to be times in your lives when you run up into a situation where there's something that you want that you just cannot have. That there's just no way that you want the thing, but it's not possible. You know, an example might be a relationship that breaks up, where it's broken up on one side, but not on yours, that you still would like the relationship, but it's clear the other person isn't interested. So the pain around that wanting, the pain around that wanting to have something that you cannot have, is going you're going to meet that kind of pain in your life. Likewise with wanting to get rid of something that you can't get rid of. There are circumstances in our lives that are difficult and stressful that we can't fix or change, that we just have to learn how to live with, learn how to meet the most skillful way that we can. And so this practice of turning towards the emotions is, I think it's helpful in these situations in particular, where we see that we can let go of the thing in the world and turn our attention towards the feeling of the emotion. In this process of turning towards the feeling of the emotion, what happens is that we start to let go of the, not only the thing in the world, but the ideas and the thoughts that kind of keep that emotion in place. So, for example, the example around the breakup of a relationship. If you, in that situation, turn towards the feeling of the wanting to have the relationship and also all the attendant grief and perhaps anger that comes about when somebody is denying you something that you want. All these emotions can get really mixed up. There's not often just one emotion happening at a time. We are multi-emotional. You know, we are not proud that way. We just will have as many as we can. So, you know, there can be kind of a confusion of emotions. And if we can turn towards the feeling in that situation, what that does is it kind of begins to take us out of the orientation to the thing that we're focused on. So it takes our attention out of that other person, that other person, for example, who's broken up with us. It takes our attention out of them and into the feelings that are present. It also can begin to take us out of the thoughts that we're spinning around. He shouldn't have done that. Why did he do that? Why did she do that? She's having a good time. I'm not having a good time. All of those kinds of thoughts that can spin when we aren't getting what we want. How can I get my partner back? What can I do to make that partner love me again? All of those thoughts tend to perpetuate the suffering, tend to perpetuate the emotions and the struggles. It's kind of that pattern of figuring out and controlling and manipulating run amok when it doesn't have any possible way to fix or control the situation. And it is just feeding the feeling of anger, of loneliness, of frustration, of all of the feelings that come up. So when we can turn with mindfulness to the actual emotion, turning towards what does it feel like to be a human being experiencing this emotion, we begin to cut the fuel that is feeding that pattern of suffering, that pattern of stress, that pattern of dissatisfactoriness. And as we cut the fuel, then that emotion has a chance to live its life. It has a chance to kind of perhaps get stronger for a while and then to flow out. I think I mentioned this last week, but I'll mention it again because I think some of you weren't here. There's a kind of an understanding about emotions where there's a strong link, emotional, in particular with emotions, there's a very strong connection between the mind and the body. And that I think some of it has to do with hormones, you know, that when there's a kind of an emotional release, a mental experience of an emotion, there's a hormonal release into the body. And so it changes our body. It actually, it impacts our body. And this is one of the reasons why it's so helpful to turn our attention towards the body with these difficult emotions, because there's a very strong connection between mind and body around emotions, and those hormones create physical experience in our bodies. So the mind going into an emotion kind of triggers this release of hormones. The brain at that kind of limbic system area triggers this release of hormones into the body. And my understanding is that if there's just one release of those hormones into the body, it will pass within about 90 seconds. 90 seconds, it will pass. But what we do is with our thoughts, we keep that emotion going. With our thoughts, with our the images, the ideas that we bring in, we keep fueling it, and it's like we just keep releasing over and over again those hormones into the body. So if you can turn towards the bodily experience and keep out of the mental kind of prompting of that emotion, it actually will pass relatively quickly. Now, it's not so easy to stay out of the thoughts. So often what happens as we turn with mindfulness to an emotion is that we feel it in our body for a little while, and then the habit of mind just slips in, even though we're trying to be mindful. It slips in with, but he shouldn't have done that. Oh, there we go again. So we get to feel it again. So that kind of practice, we notice the body, we notice the feelings, and then we notice if we get charged again, and then just coming back. Over time, this begins to help us to understand how to allow emotions to dissipate without having to fix something in the world, without having to change anything. Well, you can find that when these emotions finally fade, for even if it's just a moment, in that moment, there's no particular problem. When we start to think about it again, the problem gets recreated. So these three aspects of emotions I talked about, the aspect of the thoughts associated with the emotion, the aspect of the bodily sensations, and then there's also the aspect of the feeling in the mind. There's kind of a mood or tone in the mind that you can recognize. It's very tied to the feeling in the body as well, I think, the mood or tone in the mind. Like the feeling of fear, for example. I mean, I think if I even just say the word fear, all of you may have a sense of what fear is like for you. And there's a bodily experience of it, but there's also a kind of a mental agitation, a kind of a mental movement away from whatever we're afraid of, or perhaps a mental movement toward. If we have an angry temperament, we might move towards it to try to get rid of it. If we're afraid of it, we might have a kind of a lashing out kind of movement. So there's a distinct feeling in the body and a feeling in the mind around the emotion. So we can be mindful of any of these three. But as I think I said last week, attending in the body is one of the easiest and most helpful ways, especially in terms of letting go of some of the fuel, the feeding factory, the feeding frenzy that our mind gets in to fuel these emotions. So one of my teachers, Michelle McDonald, has talked about of various ways to connect with and work with mindfulness with of emotions. And she uses an acronym for this, so I'd like to go through these different ways. The acronym that she uses is RAIN, R-A-I-N. And the four letters stand for recognition, acceptance, investigation, and non-identification. And so these essentially are each tools. They're kind of different tools that we can use to support us in the practice of being mindful of emotions. So I'll just go over these. And I've actually talked in different ways about each of these in the last few weeks, but this kind of just brings them all together. And under this heading of this acronym makes it a little bit easier to remember this variety of approaches for working with emotions. So recognition, the first one, the first letter of the acronym. Recognition is about learning and actually just simply recognizing what the emotions are. Beginning to get familiar with the emotions and actually acknowledging, recognizing that the emotion is present. I talked a lot about recognition a couple of weeks ago. We talked about looking at the stories, the kind of the narrative that goes along with various emotions as a way to help us recognize. So, for instance, the story of fear often begins with something like, what if? What if this bad thing happens? Or the story of anger is something along the lines of, they shouldn't have done that, or you've done me wrong, that kind of thing. So learning to recognize the thoughts to help support what the recognition of the emotion is. I found it to be a very... It's not been obvious to me in my early years of practice. I was not very emotionally literate, and it was hard for me to identify my emotions. So I created a list of emotions, and I talked about this also a couple of weeks ago. I created a list and began to get familiar with the words of emotions, the words, and then from time to time I would kind of check into that list and see, do any of these resonate for me? How do I feel right now? What's the feeling that's going on right now? Do I feel anxious? Do I feel calm? Do I feel happy? Do I feel sad? Do I feel lonely? Do I feel depressed? Do I feel bored? There's so many different emotions. And this supported my kind of becoming emotionally literate to have this list of emotions. So the recognition, just the simple recognition of emotion can be really, really powerful. It's the first one in the list, but it's not the most basic in a way. I mean, it's very basic, it's very fundamental, but it's also incredibly powerful. In my own experience, early in my practice, I was working with a lot of anger, and I didn't know much about mindfulness. I had read a book that talked a little bit about being mindful, and I didn't know how to pay attention to the body. I didn't know how to really identify the various aspects of experience. But I was being made non-functional by my anger. It was quite powerful. And so what I decided to do after reading this book was to see if I could just notice when the anger came up and just simply recognize it. And that's about all I had. That was about the only tool I had at that point. Because I didn't have much. I was actually in the South Pacific. I was in the Peace Corps. And all I had in terms of mindfulness instructions was this book. And so I didn't have a teacher, I didn't have anybody to ask questions of. I just had this book, and it said, try being mindful of your emotions instead of reacting to them or thinking about them. And it's like, okay, well, I'll give this a try. And so when I noticed I was angry, which I would usually at some point in the cycle of anger notice, because it was so powerful, I would just get stuck in a loop. So at some point in there, I'd remember, oh, yeah, I said I was going to pay attention to this. And, you know, basically I was kind of like, well, what do I do with this? I have no idea what I do with this. But, yeah, I'm angry. I know I'm angry. That's about all I could do. And just that was really powerful over the course of months. Just that ability to recognize, oh, this is anger, had a very powerful impact on my experience. I began noticing over a few months that I was noticing about the anger earlier in the process. So I wasn't becoming non-functional anymore around the anger. I was waking up when it was more like normal anger or even just irritation, just in the beginning stages of it. And it wasn't so hard to be with at that point. And just over the course of months, there was a huge transformation for me that happened around this anger, just through this simple practice of recognizing, angry, I'm angry. Now, the explanation for this in neuroscience is that basically what this is doing is that it is engaging a different part of the brain. So the acknowledgement or recognition, or essentially this is kind of a labeling. It's like anger is present and the mind is recognizing, yes, anger is present. So it's kind of a labeling, a naming or a noting of experience. This brings in a different part of the brain. So most of the emotion tends to be down in the limbic system, in the kind of deeper structures of the brain. And the naming is in the higher structures of the brain. And so there have actually been studies done that when people just simply acknowledge, name their emotions, that they dissipate more quickly. There were some meditation teachers who heard about this study, and they were kind of whispering to each other, he's talking about noting, he's talking about noting. This is a tool that has been in the, for 2,500 years, that the Buddha has recommended using this acknowledging experience through naming, through noting. So this is a very powerful tool in our practice around emotions, simply to acknowledge the emotion, to recognize it, just to recognize it. Now sometimes, as I said earlier, you know, we can have these multiple emotions at a time and we may not really be able to tease them all apart. You know, it may be that, you know, there's fear and there's anger and there's frustration and there's annoyance and there's wanting and there's excitement and there's all of these things all together. And the point isn't so much to try to tease them all apart initially, but more to just meet the obviousness of the whole complex of the experience, just the mess of that experience. You might name it as chaos or confusion or simply emotions are happening. Even that is helpful. Even that is helpful in terms of recognizing emotion. So that's the R for recognition. The next is the A for acceptance. So it can be challenging at times. I mean, we judge our emotions. We think of some emotions as being bad and some emotions as being good. And what acceptance is about is kind of about being a little more neutral. It's not pushing away, and it's also not holding on to. It's not thinking that emotions are either bad or good. They just are. They have arisen. If we had had a choice, we might have, if we had seen the kind of mind moving into the space of blinding rage, we might have chosen not to go there. But given that it has come up, The understanding around emotions from a Buddhist perspective is that whatever has come up is perfectly fine to bring our mindfulness to. Not necessarily perfectly fine to act on, We don't necessarily want to act out of a blinding rage, because then we can act unskillfully, perhaps creating harm. And that's an area that we, in our mindfulness practice, in our practice, in our spiritual practice, we want to try to minimize harm, both to ourselves and others. But given that an emotion has arisen already, the most skillful and non-judgmental way to explore or to meet that is to simply be mindful of it, to bring mindfulness to that emotion. Not to try to get rid of it, not to suppress it, not to try to fix it or change it or control it, but just to understand it. This is pointing to the Buddha's first noble truth, understanding suffering, understanding it, not getting rid of it, but understanding it. What has arisen has arisen. What has come into being is already here. And any movement to push it away is adding a layer of aversion to that emotion. And so acceptance is around kind of bringing a very spacious flexibility of mind to just allow the emotion, but also not to act on it. It's kind of a very, it's kind of a radical middle path here. You know, a strong emotion arises. We don't try to suppress it, and we don't act on it either. What do? We experience it. We feel it. We're mindful of it. Giving it its opportunity to flow through us. Maybe in the 90 seconds, maybe longer. Sometimes I find one tool to help with this acceptance is to kind of allow the mind to get bigger around the experience. Often when an emotion is strong, it kind of narrows our view down to that one thing and all of the stories around it and all of the interplays and people and events around it. It kind of narrows our perspective. And something I found helpful for myself in terms of acceptance is to consciously, in the moment, so allowing the emotion to be there, but also not having it necessarily be an exclusive focus for the mindfulness. So that the allowing the attention to get really big. It's like, yeah, there's that feeling of anger, and there's also seeing happening right now, and there's also wind on my face, and there's also the sensation of my feet on the ground. There's thousands of things happening in the present moment besides that emotion. And it can create a kind of a larger context that we, you know, our vision gets really narrow. And in that narrow vision, this thing, it becomes a huge problem. Whereas when we can kind of expand our field of what we're paying attention to, it can bring it into a slightly more realistic context. It's not the only thing that's happening right now. There's a lot of other things happening. So that can support the ability to accept. Now, with acceptance, or with emotions, there also comes resistance. So that's the opposite of acceptance in a way. But we may find that there are emotions, like depression, for example. We may really resist depression. There may be a lot of resistance there. And in that case, it's kind of like there's layers of our experience. You know, maybe the depression is kind of a middle layer, and then the resistance to the depression. You know, I shouldn't be feeling this way. This is wrong. So there's that resistance. If we find that resistance is strong, then the exploration at that point is to see if you can accept the resistance. Sometimes You know, if you're trying to force yourself in to pay attention to something, if you're trying to force yourself into the middle of a layer of, you know, emotions are often felt as layered. You're trying to force yourself into the middle of an experience and not accepting the larger container of the experience, then you're actually missing perhaps something very important. So, you know, there might be a very, you know, the mind has all kinds of structures in place around various experiences, around emotions. And sometimes, for instance, this is kind of a dramatic example, but, you know, if you had a trauma in your background around some particular experience or emotion, there may well be resistance to going into emotions that would lead you into that trauma. And there are very good reasons for that resistance. So the mindfulness practice isn't about trying to force ourselves into experience. It's really about touching the obviousness of experience. And so if resistance is on the outside, can you hold that resistance with acceptance? So that it's not a problem for that resistance to be there. And maybe that sounds like I'm contradicting myself, but what I'm pointing to is meeting the experience as it is, even if that experience contains resistance. Then the third, so that's recognition, acceptance. The third is investigation. And I've talked a lot about this over the last couple of weeks and even some tonight. This is really the place around staying connected with the actuality of our experience, investigating what's actually going on in our experience. That question, what does it feel like to be a human being experiencing this emotion? Turning towards the body in particular. So in this analogy that I was using just a moment ago about touching the most obvious, touching the most kind of the outer layer as a way towards acceptance. This is a kind of another, the investigation is another way in to what's happening in the moment. So what's happening in the moment is a complex of emotions, and the investigation is about just, can you just meet the obvious experience? Investigation is sometimes described as being kind of like polishing a bowl, taking a cloth and staying in contact. In order to polish the bowl, you need to stay in contact with the bowl. This is the way one of my Burmese teachers described investigation. It's just that gentle staying in contact with the obvious, the surface, the most obvious thing that's there. It's not taking an ice pick and picking the thing apart. It's that just gentle contact with whatever is obvious. Maybe pressure and heat in the body. Maybe contraction in the throat. Maybe the feeling of anger or the feeling of fear. Now, in this investigation, to tie back to the recognition, it can often be helpful to use the noting to acknowledge what you are feeling with a gentle, soft label in the mind. Oh, pressure, heat, tension, contraction, or fear, anger. One important piece around this. So suppose you know that anger has come up. And you're noticing, okay, anger, kind of like I described earlier in that example from my own practice. Anger has come up. Anger. If you make the choice to turn to pay attention to the body, to turn to feel the physical sensations present with the anger, you might feel pressure, heat, contraction, tension, tightness. if you're using that naming, really, really helpful to switch the noting from the name of the emotion to the physical sensations you're actually experiencing. Because what you're paying attention to no longer is the actual emotion. You're paying attention to bodily sensation. You're paying attention to tightness. Tightness is not anger. Tightness is tightness. Heat is not anger. Heat is heat. So it clarifies the mind. It clarifies the mindfulness to actually connect with and recognize the physical experience. Last week I talked about a kind of a practice of going back and forth between the physical and the mental in this exploration and investigation. And I'd like to explore that with you now. Last week I didn't do this, but I thought it might be interesting to see if we could explore this. I do this with people in individual on a one-on-one basis, and so I'm not quite sure how it's going to work in a group of 30, but I think we can play with it and see what happens. So I'd like to ask you to just close your eyes and connect with your experience. Settle in. Start by just settling in and connecting with your breathing. And now I'd like to you to see if there's what kind of emotion is present, or mood. It might not be as strong as emotion, but is there a mood or an emotion present? It might be anything. It might be curiosity, it might be interest, it might be a subtle irritation or a frustration or a confusion. It might be a calmness, just whatever it is. It might be subtle or it might be obvious. Let's see if you can connect in with kind of your state of mind. How do you feel right now? And if you can, put a label on it, a very quiet, soft label. Calm, frustrated, depressed, confused, whatever it is. And now I'd like to suggest that you see if you can find some correlate in the body, some way in which this mental experience is reflected in the body. Particularly, you might check into sensations in your torso, in the area of the heart and stomach, inside the body, in the throat. And if you find any physical experiences, gently, softly name those for just a moment or two. What physical sensations you're experiencing. Pressure, tension, tightness, heat, coolness, vibration, tingling, pulsing, whatever you're experiencing. See if you can take an interest in how the body is with respect to your mood or emotion. And now I'd like to ask you to check in again to your actual mood. What is actually happening right now? Not necessarily thinking that it will be the same as it was a few minutes ago. Just check in and see, is there a mood or emotion now that's happening? Is it the same as it was a few minutes ago? Stronger or weaker? A completely different emotion present right now? Just noticing. And naming, again, whatever mood or emotion you find. Soft, gentle, quiet whisper in the mind. And now you can open your eyes if you wish. I'd just like to check in and see what happened for a few of you. You can, if you do this with a strong emotion, it will be pretty easy to find physical sensations to an emotion. It can be pretty easy to find physical sensations if the emotion is strong. And doing this back and forth, checking in, what's the emotion, naming it for a few moments, and then checking into the body and naming the physical sensations for a few moments, then going back to the mind, you may notice that there are some shifts. And then you could go back to the body, check into the body again, go back to the mind. So I'm curious, what did anybody notice anything in particular here that is of that might be interesting? Did anybody notice different emotions in the two times? You did? Would you be willing to talk about that?
I don't know what you just asked. I was just going to say something.
Okay.
What happens for me sometimes is I have different feelings, like it feels like it's in my skull, and then sometimes different places in my skull.
Uh-huh. The physical feeling.
Yeah.
Of the emotion. Yeah, that's true. There can often be a lot of physical sensations in the head around emotions. Absolutely. I mean, confusion and anxiety can feel like a whirling in the head. So it can actually be a physical sensation of like bumblebees or ping pong balls bouncing around in the head. Yeah. Thank you. So no one had any different emotions. Yeah, I didn't know how it would work. Well, do you want to say something?
I felt relief. That was my emotion, just about calm. Relief.
At the beginning?
Both.
Both, okay.
And it manifests a feeling of just kind of comfortable heaviness in my shoulders, just being... Just kind of giving into gravity. Like,
uh-huh, okay. Uh-huh. And when you went back to the mood and the mind later, was it the same?
It was the same.
It was the same, yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. Thank you. So you might just play with that. I just mostly wanted to give you the sense of that kind of back and forth, checking into the emotion and the body, to give you kind of a sense of the distinction between checking into the mental and the physical around the emotion. And so if there is an emotion for you, a strong emotion, you might play with that in the investigation. It can be a very powerful and helpful tool in investigation. So that's the eye of the rain.
On what we were talking about, just to add, I feel like lately I've been having like anxiety a little bit. And I guess that's what I was feeling a little bit. I actually feel when I concentrate on my breathing sometimes, I feel like my mind's getting kind of tired out because I'm focusing so much on the breathing. That's kind of an outlet to help. Mm-hmm. I just wondering if you had any. Do you guys hear me anymore?
There's some people who have the hearing aids.
Oh, okay. Let's see, what was I saying?
Well, I do have some things I can say. So just to repeat what you said so far so that those who have the hearing assisted devices can hear. he was talking about anxiety being one of the emotions that he experiences a lot of, and that you were feeling that a little bit in the exercise, and that in the meditation you focus on your breathing as a way to kind of get away from the anxiety. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. I'm going to ask you if this is what you said. So in the meditation, you move away from the anxiety and pay attention to the breathing, but you get tired out with that a little bit. And that you...
Sometimes if
could you speak into the mic?
Sometimes if I feel... If the emotion is strong, I feel like sometimes I can tire myself out when I'm trying to... stay with that.
Stay with the breath.
Yeah, and be mindful, because I feel like I have to focus harder in order to when the emotion is.
Yes. So when the emotion is strong, this is one of the there's a couple pieces to say here. One is that if the emotion is strong, then. Often it is challenging to stay with the breath because it's the emotion is calling the attention. So with the mindfulness practice, this is one of the instructions that if something is making it hard to stay with the breath, we can actually turn our attention to that emotion. Now, the emotion may be a little overwhelming. It may be hard to be mindful of the bodily experience of anxiety. But you could start there. You could try that. You could see, okay, anxiety is present, and you could name it for a moment or two. And then, what are the physical experiences of anxiety? Well, there's contraction in the stomach, perhaps contraction in the throat. There may be a little bit of vibration through the body, a quivering or something through the body. So there may be some physical sensations that you can connect with. And if you can connect with those sensations and then go back and check in a few moments later to the mind, you might notice maybe there's a little shift around the anxiety. And then if you find that's all way too challenging, and it can be, I mean, I talked last week a little bit about saying not now or putting emotions aside when they're overwhelming. You know, sometimes our emotions can have more power and be stronger than our ability to be mindful. In that case, I often recommend a kind of a turning to something else in our experience. And generally, in my experience, the breath is not such a good one to use for that, because a lot of the sensations of a strong emotion are in the torso. They're in this area. This is where we're feeling the breath, too. And you know, if you're having a strong emotion, often it impacts the breath. And so if you try to attend to the breath, it just keeps reminding you of the fact that that emotion is there. So sometimes it can help to turn your attention to something else. I used hearing in the guided meditation at the beginning. That can be a great one if you're experiencing something, an emotion that's hard to pay attention to. Can you let your attention rest with hearing? It's out of the body. And it generally is often, it's not got so much connection with the emotion, unless there's, you know, something happening in the environment that's triggering the anxiety. But often we can just put our attention into hearing, and that will help to be able to stay mindful and yet not, again, so it's neither repressing, it's not a repression of the anxiety. It's kind of like letting it be in the background, but putting your attention somewhere else. And that's what you're trying to do with the breathing, but it's probably so close to the feeling of the anxiety that it may be hard to stay connected with. So those are just a few thoughts. And it's basically time to stop. So I've got... No, I don't have 1 minute anymore. The non-identification piece will have to wait for another time. And I'm actually going to be away now for the next 6 weeks because I've been teaching a lot this year and I haven't had time for my own retreat, and so I'm going on my own retreat. So I'm going to take a 6-week retreat and I will be back and hopefully able to share the Dharma with you even better after my retreat. So I'll be back the second week of February. This class will continue, of course. There are people who will be here teaching. And then I think the next 2 weeks, next week Birgit is teaching, and then the following week Jim Podowski is teaching. And then for the 4 weeks after that, Tony Bernhard will be here giving a series on ethics and karma. So I hope that some of you will be interested in participating in that series. So I will see you all in February.